I'm Jonah.
I'm AC.
And I'm Jim, and this is Topic Lords, the only place on the internet you're going to hear topics discussed. Jonah, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
Oh, man, I didn't think about this. I'm Jonah. I'm going to plug my actual project instead of something silly, even though I like it when people plug something silly. Check out petrock.site. It's a synthesizer module
that it's really cool.
Put out recently.
I'm going there right now, but I can't listen to it because my headphones are plugged into the wrong computer.
Oh, that's fine. It doesn't actually make sound. It makes rhythm.
Is rhythm not a kind of sound?
Our first topic emerges.
This is like the really nerdy thing that like is really hard to explain when my mom's, you know, like friends or something are like, so Jonah, like, what are you up to? And I'm like, I'm making a synthesizer, but it doesn't make any sound. It like produces rhythmic data in real time that you send to another synthesizer that makes sound.
Okay. It's like a MIDI synthesizer.
Yeah. Except it sends a control voltage, which is like analog voltage.
Right.
Is used to.
It's just like, really slow sound.
Yeah, exactly.
And AC, would you like to introduce yourself or do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, I'm AC. I'm a game developer and a musician. I just moved back to New York City, so I'm going to plug New York City. Also working on some cool stuff, working on a game called Autograph, which you can find on itch.io and hopefully in other places 1 or 2 years from now. And yeah, that's me.
What do you like about New York City?
I feel like what I like about New York City is that there are lots of things that you can like if you want to like something. I feel like lots of people like different things about New York City.
Lots of stuff there.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff. There's lots of game developers, and that's really important. Joe and I were just talking about community and how important community is, and there's a really strong games community here, and I'm just really fortunate to be a part of that.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, like, it seems ridiculous that game developers would live where it's so expensive, but I know a lot of game developers in the Bay Area, too.
Yeah.
Maybe the second most expensive place in the world.
I think it might be more expensive than New York. Bay
Area. Oh, damn.
I guess maybe not than Manhattan.
Right,
I think it depends on like how you quantify it, but I think the Bay Area is like really up there.
Yeah.
This is our finance. This is our speculative housing podcast.
Yeah, we're speculative housing podcast where you measure who's complaining about prices too much.
Has anyone ever tried to like do Patreon, but you buy like a house in San Francisco? like crowdfunded speculative real estate, and then you like charge people rent. It's like the most evil version of Kickstarter.
Well, I mean, real estate crowdfunding, what it is and how it works. Real estate and crowdfunding, a new path for investors.
Nice.
I will say we only got one wildfire last year.
In New York City?
Well, we don't have many forests in Manhattan, but
right.
I heard that it sort of blew down from Canada. I think that was the way it went down.
Yeah. Those Canadians are, it's a real hazard, a real fire hazard to have that country next to ours.
Yeah, I missed the wildfires in the Northeast or whatever, but then I got them in Greece. I was in Greece in the summer, and I was just like, oh, I also can experience going outside and it smelling like a barbecue and the sky being bright orange. It's like, that can happen anywhere.
That's amazing. I mean, it's pretty bad in California, right? I feel like this is big news, but I'm just kind of totally unaware of it.
Fires haven't been that bad the past few years. I think PG&E finally got their shit together.
What's that?
Oh, it's the power company that's in charge of all the power lines that were setting everything on fire when they fell down.
Charge of all the fires.
Right.
Yeah, they're in charge of setting. Isn't that a thing, actually? Setting, like, part of fire management is setting fires and then, like, letting everything burn out.
This is
so
true.
That things don't become too densely.
Prescribed burn, I think, is the term.
Wait, what happened to Smokey the Bear?
Oh, he died.
Oh, like Larry the Lobster?
Canonically.
He was smoke inhalation.
Yeah, I heard Larry the Lobster drowned.
Isn't Larry the Lobster in SpongeBob?
No, I think Larry the Lobster is a real lobster from Cape Cod, right? Or Boston, maybe? And then Larry died.
Oh, my God. So I just searched for what happened to Smokey the Bear. According to this, he died in 1976.
Did they, like, kill him off? Like they're like...
Is there a successor?
They decided that people weren't taking forest fires seriously enough, so they were like, we're announcing that Smokey the Bear died in a forest fire because he wasn't vigilant enough.
So the mascot was apparently named after a real bear, is what happened there.
Well, yeah, because Larry was a real lobster, and Larry really did die. Maybe Larry was just really old, and they threw him back into the ocean ceremoniously, and then we just assume that Larry died.
Yeah,
I can't tell if this is a bit. Me,
this is not a bit. This is real.
We have a running bit about like basically like there being like lobsters on everywhere on Cape Cod. I'm from Cape Cod. and there being like lobsters running around on the highway that you have to like stop for.
I have found that you can always find someone that will believe you when you tell them that like mussels roam the earth on the East Coast.
Yeah. Who's been out there? Not me.
Exactly.
Not in a few years anyway. So according to this, the Smokey the Bear, the mascot, was retired in 2022 because the Wildfire Service said they wanted to change how people view wildfires to no longer see them as something to stop, but rather something to live with.
He got assassinated, actually.
Yeah, by millennials. They kill everything.
How did they actually, like, did he die in his sleep? Is there, like, a canonical, like, is there a canonical, like, sentence to, like, say that Smokey the Bear died without suffering?
Not on this page.
Oh, man.
But that's the takeaway. We live with forest fires. That seems pretty,
well, you know.
I think that's legit, because wasn't it really harmful, the whole thing of, like, stopping, like, the stop forest fires thing?
Yeah, stopping all the forest fires is not good. Is not good. I think it builds up. I mean, the problem is that it builds up too much fuel for when a fire finally does break out, it just goes nuts.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay. I was thinking more.
It's like how you have to burn your house every couple of years to clean out all the dust.
Right, right. Put the oven on self-clean.
And then put the house on self-clean.
Yeah. Are we ready to start on some topics?
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, so your topic is, when was the last time you listened to a song backwards?
Yeah, this was part of my quick improvised 5 minutes of workshopping topic creation exercise. But I guess I was just thinking about, you know, the whole thing about listening to, isn't it like specifically 70 songs you listen to them backwards and it's like Glory to Satan, right?
Yeah, like, and hidden messages.
Yeah, I haven't heard that in a while, you know, Glory to Satan.
Well, it came along with like the fear of satanic cults in the 80s.
Right.
Yeah.
It hasn't been part of the culture since that stopped being a fad, basically.
Well, we should bring it back.
Backmasking?
Satanic culture or satanic?
Reversing.
The satanic panic?
Is it related at all to vinyl specifically?
Certainly it was easier, like thinking in the 80s, it was certainly easier to like play a record backwards just by grabbing it physically than to play a cassette tape backwards.
Oh, interesting. Right. I think, yeah, it's also like a lot of the slowdown, the like whole 45 versus like you can like mess around with audio on vinyl pretty easily, except for if you want to play a specific song, then that's really hard.
Right. But my personal experience came in the early 90s on PC when, you know, you would use audio recording software, like even Windows Sound Recorder and Windows 3.1 or whatever had, you could record the file and then you could reverse it.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you guys seen this thing? Like, it's been a thing for a while that like this like game or idea that you play a sound backwards and then you try to imitate the backwards sound and then you play that backwards so it sounds forwards. But there's some people, I think on TikTok or something, that like do it really well and they can like, they like practice being like, and then it like plays it back and it's like, hello, what's up? You know, just like this weird.
It would be really impressive to be able to do that without hearing it.
Oh, now that would like to put your brain into backwards hearing mode.
Yeah, that would be, I think, very difficult. It would be, you'd have to relearn how to talk. But yeah, I mean, that's been a thing. Like I first heard it, I think, in Twin Peaks.
Right.
Oh.
In the dream sequences.
It's interesting to think of the fact that like before synthesized audio, just no one had ever heard what reversed sounds sound like, unless there's some, maybe there's something where like Plato shouted down a really long tube that came into his other ear and then it
was, my God,
like I have no idea if that's like a thing.
Like how would you construct like a cliff that echoes backwards?
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, the cliffs of, you know, the caves in Greece actually have a lattice structure that produces, I don't know.
Yeah. But I mean, that was what was so interesting about, I don't even know how to pronounce this. I think it's French, musique concrète, that stuff.
Musique concrète. Thank you very much.
Concrète.
And there is the first time I've used my music degree in the last month.
Nice. Knowing how to pronounce that word. Yeah. I've never heard it. I've only read it.
Yeah. And I think I took a whole class on it and I still don't like it.
I mean, who would like it? Who would like listening? Like,
oh my God, Jim. The levels at music school are sometimes interesting. I mean, I don't have any problems with people that like musique concrète, but it is like, who wouldn't love this stuff? And then they play it back and it's like,
well, there's a conversation to be had about noise, right?
I like noise music, but I think you also have to like have a sense of humor about it. And be
It makes me think of like the kind of people who would like, they would make an album in C sound Do you know?
Jim, you're describing an entire, like, it's not just like a whole school of people. It's a whole genre of school. I just visited one of these schools recently because I was looking at a master's program and I was like, oh, this looks kind of interesting. And I visited the school and we all sat down and listened. I was like, I was, you know, sitting in on a class and we sat down and we listened to this song, like this noise piece or whatever, which was kind of interesting. It was from like 1998, yeah. But it had so many of the like wizard throws blue fireball effect sounds that I just, that's all like, it was like, vroom, vroom, and like, they were all just talking about it completely seriously with no, and I was like, I have to be completely honest. Like there was a lot of good parts of it, but I just keep thinking about like a wizard or like a staff with like glowing energy, like firing an orb, like all of it sounded like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, the kind of music that I'm thinking of is like, oh yeah, sea sound. It's got infinite possibilities. You write code that generates audio, and then you listen to the music that these people make, and it's just like, here's a sine wave at the same frequency for 6 minutes.
Oh, like, yeah, so many things I want to say.
I feel so vindicated right now. That's fine or whatever, but it is sometimes like, I think if you make that, you also have to just be like, this is also hilarious that I made this, you know, like whatever conceptual thing about it that's funny, but it's also just like, this is ridiculous. In itself.
Yeah, I mean, at some level, I don't know. I'm not opposed to exploring like a possibility space just for its own sake. I think that stuff can be really interesting. Like I really like Conlon Nancarrow's works with player piano, if you're familiar with those.
No.
Wow. Now, do we need to make this? Does this need to be a topic now? I mean, he did this series of works where like he hand cut player piano paper, whatever you call the sheets that you run through the player piano.
That's it.
And he just did interesting explorations of like, what would it be like to not be limited by the limitations of like human speed and human hands? When you play the piano.
This is before computers.
Yes. Yeah.
This reminds me of those mid-2000s YouTube videos that all had the same graphic of a bunch of notes.
Oh, Black MIDI. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
called Synesthesia. If anyone, everyone's like, what's the name of the program? It's called Synesthesia.
No, and it's like, how many notes can you play or how many concurrent melodies can you have running?
Right. Yeah.
Possible songs.
Yeah. Like Rush E.
And I remember, you know, when I was a teenager doing those sorts of experiments in a tracker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking tracker.
50 years later, but with probably more, actually, now that I think about it. But it, like, if only Conlon Nancarrow had waited 50 or 60 years, he could have done the same experiments much more easily.
Right.
With much less labor.
If only he had entered cryosleep.
Yeah, but like,
and waited for the technology.
At some level, I feel like you have to. Okay, when I say you have to. Obviously, there's some constraint that I should be putting in this sentence that I can't think of. But I'll just say, you have to make it something someone would want to listen to.
Yeah, that's an interesting constraint. You're throwing out a lot of music with that statement.
That's true.
You're throwing out like entire philosophies as well. Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree with
that. So we have to answer the question, though. When is the last time?
Oh, what was the question? Oh, well, the last time I did this?
You listen to a song in reverse.
So listen to someone else's song in reverse.
Or it could be interpreted as like walking backwards, maybe.
Not like something I had recorded myself.
Well, the last song I can remember is a song I recorded myself.
Okay.
Because when do you do it, right?
Yeah, like when would you put it into the situation in which you could press reverse? It's only like when you're recording.
Yeah, like the last time that I remember, and this isn't a specific time, I can't remember a specific instance of this, but like the last era in which I would have just loaded up a music into, it would have been SoundForge at the time. That's what I was using back then.
Oh, classic.
It was like probably the late 90s.
Wow. That's quite a ways back.
Yeah. I'm an old man.
Which is, it's funny. Just thinking about things in general, you know, it's just something dumb you haven't done in 20 years or whatever. It's
yeah.
Like the last time I had a Twinkie.
Yeah. This is a side topic in itself, but my dad is 80.
Yeah.
And for reference, I'm 26.
Oh, damn. Congrats to your dad.
Yeah. And he's doing great. He's he can still like bike a bunch. He's in very good health in basically every way.
Good for him.
But it also, it's really funny because it means that I just never think that anyone is ever like old. Whenever anyone is like, oh, well, you wouldn't believe what I'm talking about stuff in the 80s. And I'm like, my father was born before World War II ended. My dad's like, I remember, you know, like getting a TV. And I'm just like, so my whole like time scale is just yeah, whatever.
So I've got the Wikipedia page for backmasking on up right now.
That's the hidden messages.
Oh, that's the term for it?
Yes.
Yeah. It says here, the B-side of the Napoleon 14 single, They're Coming to Take Me Away, Haha, is a reversed version of the entire Forwards record titled, and then it's just the text, They're Coming to Take Me Away, Haha, backwards.
This is like, you have one day to deliver the beat. There's like, there's a second side to the record? Yeah. Oh, what are we going to do?
The forward version reached number 3 in the U.S. charts. It doesn't say what number the backwards version reached.
It reached -3 in the mirror charts, in the upside down.
But that made me realize I've listened to the backwards version of They're Coming to Take Me Away, Haha, in the past 2 years.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Yeah. Saved. Nice. Has an answer.
I was going to say, I do a lot of like modular synth stuff, hence me making synth module, but my main synth module that I use a lot is this one called Squid Sample.
Okay, how do you spell that?
Can you say that? Yeah, say that again for us.
S-A-L-M-P-L-E. Tell me I'm wrong.
Sample?
Squid Sample.
Squid Sample.
Sample. And it is a sampler, and it has a big old reverse button on it, which is kind of fun. So you can just always
control voltage sampler. What an interesting combination of technologies.
Yes, it's pretty cool. I don't know why I'm like giving them free plug right now to the vast topic lords. I'm giving them access to the topic lords
demo
market share.
I mean, there are definitely musicians who listen to this show.
I was gonna say, actually, the market for like a weird sampler is probably much higher than usual in the topic lords.
I would expect so. It's certainly higher in the topic lords. This module has firmware. That's also weird.
Oh, you'd be surprised, actually, these days.
Of course it is. It's all digital, I'm sure.
It is. I mean, I'm looking at my rack right now, and every single module on it has firmware. Okay, not every single, but all the main modules
have firmware. Okay, at that point, why even have the cables?
Jim.
Turn away. Buddy, turn Jim. Around now. Jim. Walk right. out the door.
So how often do you guys do like addendum episodes where there's a whole extra hour long episode inside of the episode that's like a different link? Also, how dare you? Also, let me begin.
We cut out the 30 minutes where Jonah was raging, and now we fast forwarded to the end.
Statement. Just use Bluetooth.
Let me give a one.
Oh,
God.
Oh, cut for another 30 minutes.
Bluetooth, the motto, it works. It works every time, the first time, Bluetooth. Yeah, I mean, the real answer is like just conceptual separations between things. So you're using the cables to like build your own system that does whatever it wants.
And right, and also like hypothetically, you could put any of these modules in like an analog modular synthesizer as well.
Yes. Yes. I mean, they're all interchangeable with analog modules. Anyway,
so why not do it in software, Jonah?
Yes. Get VCV Rack is open source modular software. It's really good. I ask myself that every day.
Does it have cool cable physics? Do they dangle?
I think they are taut, unfortunately. Probably somebody has made like a... The funny thing is like, yeah, the visual rendering in that program usually takes up more processing than the thing.
Right.
So you can like turn it into like, I don't know, some like weird mode where you can't see anything, but you can like hear everything.
There's a proprietary Native Instruments modular software package that has cable physics.
The next, and what was the next topic?
Oh yeah, cut for time.
What were we talking about? Backmasking.
Backmasking.
So where did this term come from?
Well, it's masking the message by playing it backwards.
Something rubs me the wrong way here. It feels like we're masking the back. Yeah, we're backmasking. Or we're masking it in retrospect. We're backmasking.
It does sound like a form of like an alternate form of gaslighting or something.
Yeah, exactly. Backmasking. The Twitter term.
Right? It's like saying that there's like a previous history that doesn't exist.
I am kind of curious who first called it backmasking. No. We'll never know.
There's no etym online. The etymology dictionary does not have an entry for backmasking.
What about Wiktionary? See, I know there are some actual linguists in the audience or in the Lords group, and I'm just an amateur linguist, but I like Wiktionary, but maybe Wiktionary is entry level.
I mean, you can get dictionary stuff there.
Have you been to Wiktionary2.com? That's actually pretty.
Wiktionary 2?
No, I'm just
if Wiktionary is so good, why isn't there a Wiktionary 2?
Have you been to cool Wikipedia, but it's invite only?
That probably exists, right? There's so many Wikipedia variants these days that I would believe.
Wikipedia, anything. But don't tell anybody.
Cool.wikipedia. No, it's wikipedia.com/cool. Right? They do all of their variants after the.
I mean, I was ready to believe you that there was a Wiktionary too, because
like a fork of an entire.
There was a website called everything.com, which was just like an attempt to catalog all the things. They went on and they made everything2.com, which was like, okay, we made everything a little bit better. And now it's called everything too.
But I feel like there should be a TLD that's .com too. Because it should be everything.com too. It's not everything2.com. It's everything.com too.
I mean, I think you can make that happen now.
Can you make your own TLDs? What?
Yeah, you just need enough money.
Ah, yes. Nice.
Classical.
That's what I've chosen to spend my money on, is making .com too a TLD.
The headline number for new top-level domains is $185,000. Oh, that's for the price for submitting an application.
They're doing the expensive private US college thing, which is like, it costs $150 just to send your application in, and you're like, what do you mean?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And then it's you have to pay $25,000 a year from there on.
That doesn't seem like that much for a $180,000 application fee.
Oh, I guess you like get like, it for sure. It's real estate, or maybe it's not. If you design the TLD, do you get royalties?
Yeah, you get
a penny anytime anyone ever visits a dot pizza site.
You get to sell access to it.
Oh my god.
So it's an investment.
Hurry up, dot Jonah.
I was gonna say I think dot gym is pretty good.
Dot gym.
Like what if your website was like gym.gym?
Slim dot gym.
Just go to gym.gym.
I feel like that's a obvious one enough that they must not allow it for some reason.
Go to gym.gym really quick.
It's probably someone paid their $185,000 and they're like, nope, you don't get .gym. Sorry. You can't have it.
Why don't they have just dot single letters? That seems like a really obvious.
You say dot singles?
No, dot like dot T or dot A or dot E, you know, like just a single letter dot.
Easy. This has gotta be a regulated thing, I would imagine. I don't know if some government agency desperately needs dot Z.
I can tell Jim doing research by like the light bouncing off of his face.
According to the RFCs, a single letter TLD is technically possible, but none exist right now.
It would be too powerful.
Right.
the servers can't handle it. It would make the servers too warm.
The RFC.
Are we ready for another topic?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Jonah, your topic is decentralized manufacturing.
I put in a couple topics and I was like, oh, you know, we were saying before the show started that I was like, oh, I didn't want this one to get picked. And Jim was like, well, we could do any of the topics you want. But you know, the thing is that I want something to get, I need like a guiding
strength.
Yes. I need a guiding force.
Yeah. You want to be forced to pick a topic you don't want.
Precisely.
This is a BDSM show now.
No, it's a design show.
I'm a switch designer. Sometimes
okay,
I want
to. All right.
I am actually like that. I either like to fully make a decision or have somebody make a decision fully for me. My issue is when the whole us agreeing on something happens, which is very difficult for me. Uh-huh. Anyway, decentralized manufacturing. So I've been working on the synth project. It's been going really well. A bunch of people want them. I made like 50 of them initially. By myself, I like order the boards from China, and then there's like some.
Oh, you manufactured these by hand?
Well, the first 50, yeah. I mean, it's like it comes with like a fully assembled circuit board, and you just have to like put it in a couple of big components, solder those, and then like assemble it. But that is like something, you know?
Yeah.
And so I assembled the first 50, and I was like, nice. And then like I was like, probably I'll make these 50, and maybe some other people will want some. And then like I got like 500 pre-orders, and I was like, oh, I really don't want to like sit in my basement and solder these for like 5 weeks without seeing sunlight. I was just like, that just sounds like too much. So I have like a company that's like doing it for me. It's like a local synth store called Synth Cube in Boston. And they were nice enough to assemble them for me and ship them out because they already have the stuff for that. But, and I was like, the synth is sold at cost of production. That's like, I'm doing this whole sort of like conceptual thing of being like, oh, what if I sold this at cost of production? Because modular synths, the things we were talking about before, are insanely expensive to like a laughable degree, where basically you have to buy like a box that they all share power with, and then you like, you buy individual parts of the synth and you like screw them in with screws, and then you like plug cables in between them, for people right. that don't know what modular synths are. And like one, like Squid Sample, which is a sampler which plays audio, that's $500.
Squid Sample.
$500 just for like one, like you can't even make music with just that thing. You need like another thing, which costs like $400. And then you need the case, and the case costs like $500. And it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, in order to do, you know, like there are some cheap things, but like mainly in order to do stuff, you just need to drop like $1,500.
I mean, all that firmware costs money.
Well, that's the actual reason. Like that.
All that not just using a computer is really expensive.
Yeah, literally. So my thing costs like $30, which is really cheap in the space. But I was thinking about ways that things can be manufactured. And I was thinking about the idea of maybe, rather than there being a place where they get manufactured and then sent out to, having it be like a headhunting thing where like, you can ask me to buy like 100 at wholesale price, which is just the price I pay for them. And then you can sell them to other people, and there's a fixed retail price, and you can like solder them in your room, and you can make, you know, $10 per one that you solder, which that takes about 5 minutes, 10 minutes to assemble one. And then you like ship them out from wherever. And, you know, the customer pays shipping, but it's like having like an army of just people that kind of like make some side money. It'd be pretty good money to make on the side if you know how to solder, which is really easy to learn. You can learn it in like a day or two. And then it'd be this weird like network. And that would also solve a big problem, which is that when you ship things from America to Europe, it's really expensive. When you ship things from America to like Australia, it's really expensive. But it would just be like, if there happens to be, you know, somebody in your country that wants to be a random manufacturer, then all they have to do is like tell me, and I'll just order 100 boards to their house. Just
franchising your rhythm box.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then those people become middle managers and hire other people.
This is not Herbalife. I would love synth Herbalife though, because then I would have a garage full of synths.
But they'd all be the same synth. That's the problem.
That's actually really true.
It's not always a bad thing.
Anyway, yeah. So I don't know. This was just like a thought I had. I don't think it's really that much of like a topic. And it's also serious, which I think is my least favorite.
Well, it did remind me of our admin meetings conversation.
Go on.
Oh, it's Jonah hasn't joined in fully yet, but one of my roommates and I, we, you know, administrative work is kind of a bummer, and, you know, it never quite fits into the work schedule. So we do this thing where we do each other's administrative work for, you know, 2 hours on the assigned admin, you know, weekdays. And it's kind of like this communal work structure. And it was so successful that at a certain point I was just like, why don't I just develop games this way? You know,
like pair, like somebody else makes your games.
Well, it's just funny. You
make somebody else's game.
Yeah. You're just giving 10 hours, you know, a week away to other people, but you're getting 10 hours back. Right. It always goes in one direction and comes back in one direction. So.
Yeah. I mean, that sort of thing seems like a labor swap. It seems like it would be valuable if you have different skills, or if you just need a fresh eyes on the project.
Yeah. I think it was, cause we all do this, right? Anyways, you know, just as human beings with social relationships and people who do work and stuff. But I think structuring it was a powerful thing, like saying like, oh, on Thursdays from 8 to 10 a.m. And we also have some rituals. I mean, I think rituals are always really important with these kinds of things, where it's like, you know, we have a very like strict relationship where it's like the person who's giving the work is very responsible for structuring the work for the person who's doing the labor, and making that role and relationship really clear, I think makes it a really powerful thing, because when the day of the week comes around, you're thinking about it like, oh, do I have everything prepared, you know, for this labor swap? It was a much cooler term, labor swap. So start using that. You heard it here first from Jim.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I think the idea of like a labor swap is interesting, because this is like the original manufacturing thing is a lot more one-sided. I think I've also like, it's interesting. I've had the implication to me that like my, you know, when I talk to people or something about like, you know, like, yeah, like you don't want to be spending your time, you know, soldering, you know, you want to be designing. And it's the sort of like that you're, that's beneath you. And I do feel like for me, it's weirdly, I'm like, ah, no, like I would be soldering. I don't know, like physically it's more like, do I have to be like be in one place, which I move around a lot. And then there's like all these like problems with soldering, but I have no conceptual thing of like, you know, my time is worth more that I shouldn't be soldering.
Yeah.
But I think it'd also be fun as like a payout. I'm just now imagining the hell of like, you know, how to like paying taxes on a business that does that. It's like I have people working for me in every country, but their contract.
You hire an accountant. This is, or you could do a labor swap with them if they need like, if they need modular synthesizers.
They do my taxes. I cook them food.
Was this like, there's this story of David Graeber owning a communal car, tried to own like a car in New York City that everybody owned. And it just, they tried so hard and it just never, it was impossible to do it within the structure of like New York City regulations.
Oh, you mean legally it was impossible?
Yeah. Or maybe just practically. I don't remember.
Yeah. That seems like it would be, it seems like it's a gimmick. Like that would be more of a joke than an actual practical thing to do.
Well, I
had like 100 cars.
Well, there's Zipcar. Zipcar is a little
bit. Yeah. I mean, that, like, or how about if you had a public transit? Like, what if you had a subway? What if you had a public transit system?
Shut up.
Could serve everybody and everybody paid for it.
Yeah. We'll stop you right there. I think you're going a little bit too far.
This is actually, yeah. I mean, not to like do a completely different topic, but the thing with the New York City public transit system and having a car is like the reason why having a car. I think for a lot of people is nice in New York is that like what you can't get to on the New York transit system is things that aren't New York or like, you know, like the city, things that are not the city.
Yeah.
And it's really weird because you can get directly next to a bunch of really beautiful nature, but then you're just at a train station and you're like, okay,
you got to walk into the nature.
Well, no, it's like you need to like Uber in, you need to like Uber to the trailhead, you know, which is just such a disgusting sentence. Be like, yeah, we have to Uber for $40 to like get to the trailhead and then Uber back to the train station because there's like really good infrastructure for some stuff. And then everything is just like, well, you're here.
You're right. That does sound bad.
Where's your car?
Uber to the trailhead. BuzzFeed Hamilton Slack.
What is BuzzFeed Hamilton Slack?
It's just a reference to this current affairs article that I think is very good. But
let's leave it alone. We're talking about decentralized manufacturing and I'm the podcast host now. look at me. I'm the podcast.
There's so much power in the two of us being in one physical space right next to each other, I have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just started the new job. Like I started like a week ago. And I already feel like I know my coworkers better than I ever got to know the ones at my previous remote only job.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That sounds like fun. Do you get to like eat lunch with people and then talk to them and like be like, I feel like that's just so much better than being like, well, I'm going to go do my thing like at my house.
Well, listen, I love doing my thing at my house. Like I've been before this, I'd been work from home for like 15 years and I did it on purpose, you know?
Like, yeah, I feel that.
But this is turning out okay.
Nice.
The commute's not too bad. You know, the people seem cool.
How bad is it?
It's not too bad.
That sounds really nice. I've never worked in an office besides like being a teacher at some point, like at a summer camp for like type programming. But yeah, besides that, I work with Dan and he lives in Canada, so. We have never done work like what we've only ever seen each other on like, you know, at like conferences and like, or like doing like shared. Yeah,
I've always fantasized about working in an office, you know.
Didn't you used to work in?
I have worked in offices before, but I mean, you know, the dream of having a studio and there's an office, you know, and all of your little studio friends, your little creative studio friends are there and you're hanging out and you're being creative. And then now I just feel like this is so antithetical to how I approach these things. I'm just like, imagine paying rent for an office.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Ridiculous.
I don't know. It's genuinely, I'm just like, imagine where else I could put that money for a bunch of people who are trying to cooperatively make something.
Yeah. Imagine like you're on the hook for like a 10-year lease of an office, like of like an entire building in San Francisco.
Is this coming from personal experience?
No, but like I think what's happening is that like this is driving the return to the office more than anything else is like we've got this fucking building. We better do something with it.
Oh, that's
yeah. That sounds about right. No, it's good for like employees, I guess. I think the funniest thing is like, okay, for context, I'm a game audio person, and like it's always like we have an entire in-house staff. It's like, oh, really? Everyone works at the company. It's like everybody. Oh, except for the audio guys. They just do their own thing. It's like always the audio guys are like the only people.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Darren Korb works in-house. I think that sounds like fun.
Well, don't they have an in-house voiceover guy, like voice acting guy?
Oh, he just walks around and talks.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking, isn't it? Isn't like
reads the announcements.
Isn't he a bit more? Yeah, that's great. Like it's not even for the game. It's just like you hear this booming reverb voice and it's like
that's great. Like, I want one of those. Special
is chilly today.
Let me add this to my studio wish list. I don't need an office. I just need a voice actor.
Well, that's the thing about audio guys. You're in charge of an entire sense. But everybody else can like work for 5 years to make the video game and you can be done. You can do the whole video game's audio in like a month.
Hey, some of us.
Yeah, Jonah.
Well, I think the funny thing is like
we should pay you less.
I feel this way. And I don't know. The way I work with Dan is very like I work alongside the game while he does it. But it is funny how like I don't know why audio is like that, or I guess like it's definitely like a lot harder than like I mean like programming takes a lot more time and stuff and design. But I do think I won't like mention any specific aspects because I feel like this is just a whole. But there are like other aspects that you could like do as fast as you do audio. I do feel like I'm very cocky. Like I do feel like if you could give me a game and as long as I had like 1 to 2 months of just like complete. The only thing I can that's coursing through my brain
is sound isolation.
There's an existing term for this, and it's called poop socking it, which is like I really
family show.
I really didn't want to say that, but it is like the technical term for this, which is when you just like do like bad crunch.
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Bad news. Thesaurus.com does not have an entry for poop socking, so we're on our own.
That's because that's the most colorful word there is for it. But why are you looking at thesaurus.com?
But there should be a word that is less colorful that also it is a synonym.
Focusing, maybe, I guess.
Okay, uh-huh.
Vice.com
article
named, "Is anyone actually, quote, poop socking Diablo 4?
Oh, I'm seeing the definition for this now.
Let's just talk about something else. Anyway, I think that if I concentrated really hard and did a lot of work, I could score or do sound for any game in like, you know, 2 months or so.
Right.
That's it, yeah.
Or, you know, or more time if... You know, you don't focus as much.
Tactical delay.
But this goes for like games where like there are hundreds of artists. Still, there only needs to be one UI guy and you don't need him full time. So like it makes sense that nobody hires a full time. Like, I think it's rare.
Yeah. I will say like it's particularly true with composition. Like sound design is actually a really big job. For a game,
it depends on how detailed you want to get.
I guess right if you're like hiring an orchestra or something. But like I've found in my own experience that sound design is like at least 5 times bigger a job than scoring. Like pound for pound, just in terms of time. Like scoring, I think is more important and takes more. You have to be better at it, and it takes more thought.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, my experience, like I've done sound design for I think almost every game I've worked on. I've done the sound design. And I just don't work that hard at it because, you know, you get the high points, you get the most important, like the, it's the 80-20 rule, you know, you get the 80% and you're golden.
Jonah, we should pay you less.
Yeah, I agree. One day I'll say something, Jim, that will hurt you as much as you. No, I mean, here's the funny thing is that like I can't be offended because literally the only reason why I started doing sound design, so I didn't do sound design for like the first game that I worked on with Dan, and then I started doing it like purely because he was like, I don't want to like keep looking up everything on Freesound. And so it was kind of pitched as like, can you be the guy to look up everything on Freesound so I don't have to do it? And I was like, yeah, totally. And then that slowly
turned into me in like audio school, right?
Doing sound design.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, actual AAA games are just all recut library sounds. Like every single sound is a recut library sound.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day, it was more like you would make mouth noises into a microphone and then edit that.
Oh, that's coming back.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that's been back. I have scored things like that.
You know, I was going to say with the Office conference, I was just thinking about Double Fine with their San Francisco office and how much they must be paying on that space.
Yeah, it seems like a mistake. Like Double Fine as a company that is like trying to just barely scrape by making art games.
Yeah,
San Francisco was not the place for them to set up shop, as it turns out.
Was it when they set up shop? I mean, probably not.
No, I mean, that was like early 2000s. It was, yeah. I'm sure it wasn't nearly as bad. What they should have done, when kink.com bought the Armory.
Oh, this
what?
Is
what's the Armory?
Not inside my lore space.
This is a porn site.
I assumed it wasn't a hairstyling website or right. A thing about bending.
They
things.
Bought a building called the Armory, which apparently was at one point an armory in San Francisco. I think it was as an investment. And eventually they were like,
they got all the maces that were in there and the whips.
But it was also like to shoot porn in this building.
I don't know about this armory.
Okay, so they bought it in 2006.
You get that, like that. They're like, and the Japanese soldiers actually knit this armor that would stop arrows. And now you can see a woman having sex in it.
Yeah. They bought it for $14 million.
That's actually, that doesn't sound that bad.
In 2006, yeah.
Maybe they were pivoting.
And
they got a contract with the U.S. Army.
And they sold it. I'm pretty sure the reason they sold it was just because it was just like, this building is worth so much money. It would be like having a huge pile of gold that you use just to shoot porn on.
Wait. Is that what you believe, or is that what
this is? This is my interpretation of events. Okay. They sold it for $65 million in 2018.
They bought it for how much? You say 15 or
14 million? Sold it for 65.
Yeah, it's like a lot of profit.
That's how you do it, kids.
Yeah, you go back in time and you have $14 million, and you can quadruple your money.
Yeah, there was this guy that sold his forehead as advertising space, as a tattoo advertising space, and like Pornhub just bought it. It's just a huge Pornhub logo.
When did this happen?
Oh my god, that's really funny.
And it was for like way too little money.
I think it was for like
$4,000.
There was the person who renamed themselves, right? I got a plosive in there by accident. Somebody renamed, like they changed their name.
Oh, I'm like, I'm Joseph Circuit City Smith.
Goes or something. But this was a whole thing. I figured.
All right. I tried to look up this guy and it's just all safe search.
Yeah, no. Well, if you have safe search off and you search for Pornhub forehead tattoo, it is also not what we're trying to find.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, I found the guy, and I think it's like a bunch of different porn sites. Actually, it's like five different porn sites all over his face.
God, what a way to live your life.
This, and then one of them says, this guy needs your help to remove his porn site face tattoos.
Oh, he's moving to Patreon.
Yeah. Wow. I'm sorry. I'm just really transfixed by these images.
Is he wearing color changing contacts?
Yes, he's wearing red.
This is the most interesting part for me.
I don't know why he's wearing red contacts.
I've always wanted color-changing contacts, but I once read that you have to be pre-approved for them.
Color-changing contacts? I think these are just colored contacts. I don't know if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's kind of what I meant.
I'm pretty sure you can buy them on Amazon.
Like approved, like how? Like they have to decide that you're worthy?
I think
that sounds much better. I think there's some kind of doctor approval thing. But I believe that sure this you is can, not true.
You can buy them on Amazon for $9.
All right. Snake Eyes tomorrow.
They're like, you can buy in, oh my,
you can buy is, like, 30. Is it, you can only have them if you would be attractive.
Yeah, exactly.
Just really quickly, you can buy 100 variety pack of different Snake Eyes contacts for $12 on Amazon.
I mean, I was saying Snake Eyes aspirationally, but it appears that this is now a reality. Or it could be a reality very soon.
Oh, they have glow-in-the-dark one.
Okay, this is awesome. My life is... I'm so glad I'm on this podcast right now.
I'm not hanging out with you. Put in Snake Eyes contacts and we go.
I would be terrified to buy contacts from anyone that wasn't like a... I don't know, like a hospital, I guess.
Contacts.com specialist.
A pharmacy.
Big Contact has you in their pocket.
Dot Contact.
I got a contacts guy. He's great.
You have a contacts contact?
Yes, I have. Oh, wait. Are these actual contacts?
Oh, are those just commemorative memorabilia?
Sorry, I'm looking at the contacts picture and they're actually like...
Oh, they're just googly.
They're actually, they're literally googly eyes.
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
I mean, here's what you do. You just take regular contact lenses. You get out your miniature painting kit and you just paint the colors you want on the lenses
with eye paint.
Yeah.
If you scroll through, you can see that they're also, they have like a paper backing and they're like hard.
Easy to use. Just glue it on anything you like. That could be your eye if you decide to be.
You could, for one glorious night, you could go out in a blaze of glory before losing your eyes forever.
Yeah. Related products, we have antique sword, knife, bookmark, charm, swords, knife, pendants, knife, charms for bookmarks.
Nice.
So, two topics, huh?
Yeah, are we ready for another one? Maybe well, we could do three.
I think we've done like 17 topics interstitially.
Yeah, but not by the numbers.
Where are your design constraints now? Let's go.
All right. My topic is, are there other terms like foodies to describe people who are super into universal bodily functions? Like, I love breathing. I love breathing so much that I go to a breathing club and we breathe really hard.
But see, in this version, then foodies are actually Edies.
Yeah.
Because they like eating.
Aries.
So this would be Aries,
which, whoa, is that where they came up with the god of war?
I'm sorry. I have to mention now the obligatory, what if the walkie-talkie inventor invented other things?
Uh-huh.
The hardy starty is by far my favorite. Defibrillator replacement.
Okay, that's good. Yeah,
I mean, there are, I'm sure people know that there are canned air enjoyers.
Yeah, and there's like vape folks.
It's not like breathing.
There's like hookah bars. God damn it, this is just a real thing.
No, hookah bars.
I was trying to joke about.
I hate to burst your innocence, but hookah bars are not the same as breathing air.
No, but you're still breathing.
Pretty interesting. I guess you're right. Like, air is just a really comfortable version of smoke.
It's just the best thing to breathe.
I smoke like a many packs of oxygen a day.
What about shitties?
Shitties?
Yeah, shitties could be the shitty could refer to the act or to the substance, so it works either way.
Yeah, I could like people that really like a satisfying poop.
Yeah, there are probably four of them.
But are connoisseurs.
I'm going to search for a Facebook group for people who love shitting.
There's a pretty small circle here, which is like completely non-sexual, but enough for it to be part of your like personality. And I think it's like, uncles or something. Like, I feel like it's like wholesome just being like, yeah, had a great poop today.
Oh no.
I really don't want to know about this.
There are a lot of things
I really don't I could want to say. Think about.
Okay,
this.
So it's a private group, thankfully.
Yeah, that's because you're not cool. You don't have this.
But the description makes me not want to go in there. a shitty place for shitty people, it says.
Wait, what was the prompt again?
Other terms like foodies to refer to people who are really into universal bodily functions.
Like Blinkos.
Oh, because Blinko. Oh, I see.
Blinkos.
Yeah, eating is.
Those are in Australia. Yeah. Blinkos.
Oh.
Blinko myself. I think about this when I think about like how like insane the vocabulary for mechanical keyboards has become.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of like
that's
how many.
I was
looking at the switches for mechanical keyboards. I'm like, it's crazy that like 10 or 20 years ago, all of these nuances were not really thought about. So maybe they'll be like, yeah, I love blinking with like a 1-2 pattern, or like I love the blink of this like saline solution in my eyes. It's really smooth.
But blinking is so autonomic, you know, but like eating
it is right now.
But we're bringing it back. We're recovering blinking as the lost record form.
Pleasure.
Yeah, or like sneezing. You could sneezing is
a sneezing
involuntary, but you could induce sneezing if you were really into it.
Isn't there okay? There's a 1 in a million chance that you die when you sneeze.
Okay, that's true for any amount of time in your life.
No, smoking is totally safe, but sneezing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, wait. Okay, wait. Jim, I actually have a real answer to this, which I just remembered, which was like, I bought this incense that I really liked.
Uh-huh.
And then I went on to the incense subreddit And it's this. It's people being like, yeah, I really like this aroma and this other aroma. And it's like, I've been burning this one, you know, this aroma. And it's all like people talking about like scents in very like distinguished high brown. Like, oh yeah, this is more of like a Japanese style, like incense. And this one is very like,
that seems
this one is very like Indian, you know, influenced because it has this like spice in it. And it's very, this one's very classic, you know, and this one's like a modern whatever. And I was like, whoa, there's like a whole world just for smelling.
Well, right, because taste and scent are highly coupled.
That's
right?
True.
That's
yeah.
why I eat my incense sticks.
So I wonder, yeah, so what's the, remember we have to get that noun, like food, not the verb. So
stinkies.
Jim's always
kind of. You work in marketing?
I'm reading about how your heart doesn't stop every time you sneeze, which is apparently a thing some people believe.
Well, but the gum must stay in your stomach for 7 years before it gets
digested. I'm just, this is a public service announcement, folks. Don't stop sneezing as soon as possible. Your heart may stop. You might need a hearty starty to get
that. Hearty starty. This is like that old 4chan post of the British guy and all the like different words for things. I've never actually been on 4chan. I feel like there's a green text subreddit. I've been on there.
r/4chan.
Yes. Well, I'm watching Jim's face like be like cascadingly lit up, signaling to you that he's in research mode.
Oh, I was just looking at green text, but like, I don't know why I bothered to look at that. Like, it's not like I haven't seen.
I think I'm talking about the British saying green text, which I don't remember.
Are there other colored texts, by the way?
No, I don't believe there are.
Isn't there blue text?
That's for links.
Check out this sick blue text.
Only just the link to it. Just,
oh, yeah. The r/blue text is just for links to others' websites.
Is that a joke or is that
true? That's a joke, but I think it's a good idea.
Can someone go to r/blue text? I want to believe.
It's a private community.
There is some, I will say 4chan, as always, I think this meme probably has some like really horrible stuff somewhere in it. Yes, it does. Confirmed. But there are some really funny ones. It's like fake British sayings, when it's my face when Americans call nutty gum and fruit spleggings peanut butter and jelly. that's pretty good. It's like a bunch of those motorized rolling hams for cars. Anyways, just never look up green texts. Although it's
blue texts, though.
Green texts are like hunting in a minefield.
Are we ready for another topic?
Let's go.
Yes.
We're powering up now.
This topic, we're going to be reading the poem "The Bathroom Line" by Jesse Thurston.
Oh boy, where is it?
Continue the theme.
Should I give the context before episode or after?
Let's give the context afterwards.
Okay. "The Bathroom Line" by Jesse Thurston. Some people miss the door entirely and stumble down the stairs. Sir, sir, you looking for? Completely unawares. Sometimes the line is endless. You wait and wait and wait. Missing shrimp, missing dessert. How cruel when that's your fate. Sometimes you're lucky. You park next to someone cute. Trust me, some people find the one while in line to poop. But now you're here, alone at last. You and the unicorn. So do what you came here to do and go back out reborn.
Yeah, so last time you read this to me, you had said you had found this poem in a bathroom. And the last time you read this to me, I had believed that you meant like someone had written it on the wall.
I find it weird that you had no qualms that there would be that length of poem like perfectly legible on a bathroom wall.
I believe it.
I've seen that sort of thing. Not lately. I went to college for like a year, and one of my favorite things about it was that there was this particular bathroom that no one ever cleaned the walls. And so,
sorry, one of your favorite things about it.
And so there was like, it was like a community message board where some of those, it was just covered with art.
That is awesome.
And poems and essays, and most of them were garbage, but that's fine. It's like, there were these little murals you could look at. And I don't know why people have a problem with graffiti.
I totally agree. Yeah. It's so great. Especially bathroom graffiti is
bathroom graffiti specifically, like it's something to look at. And well, I guess nowadays you're just going to look at your phone. But this was, 2004 or something like that. I've definitely seen text that, like, I don't think it was a poem, but it was like an essay that was that long written on the bathroom wall.
That sounds great. I would read an essay written on a bathroom wall.
You know, back in university, the physics department, they had physics problems posted in all the stalls. And the subheader, or the header was always like, physics for the toilet.
Okay, but was it written like in Sharpie? Or was it like taped there, like on a piece of paper?
No, this is the physics department. They had, you know, full double layered chalkboard and
Oh, there was a chalkboard in the bathroom.
It was printed on an 8x11 piece of paper.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, it's not very fun. It should be Sharpied.
I remember working in an office building shortly after that experience in college. And like, I remember sitting on the toilet, looking around at these bathroom stalls. There's like nothing on these walls, nothing. And I was like, okay, I'm going to be the change I want to see in the world. And I brought like a mechanical pencil to work. And I just wrote like a little mess. I forget what it even was. Just a little message in like the bathroom grout. And nobody like responded. Nobody like responded in kind. It was like me sending a message in a bottle out there and getting no response.
Like, help, I'm trapped in the bathroom grout.
And then like a few weeks later, someone had cleaned it. And it was like, what? No one else wants to live in this world, apparently.
Yeah.
I definitely want to live in this world.
I feel like I've had that experience many times, but at this moment I can't conjure up, you know, a memory. But just, yeah, that whole vibe of just wanting to reach out, you know, especially in like a big urban environment. You know, you just feel like you're surrounded by people and you wanted to say something.
Yeah, the real context for this poem, just to go over it quickly, is also that I think it's bad. And what happened was I brought two poems to Jim and he was like, we've done those before. And then I was like,
yeah, we had done both of them
right before we recorded this. We're at this bar and I was like, and there was a poem in the bathroom. I was like, oh my God, like I could use, if I can't think of anything, I could use this poem. And then I read it and I was like, ah, I really wish it was, it's kind of, it kind of sucks. And it was like, I guess I'll just take a picture of it just in case.
Right.
That's my backup, my caveat backup poem. But it did feel quite serendipitous that I was like peeing and I was like, got to think of what poem I'm going to bring to Jim. It's just,
it's not right often here that you get to read it, you get to see a new poem while you're peeing.
And actually, to be honest, no way to pee while looking at this poem.
Oh, I could figure it out.
You'd have to do a pretty long, like a trick shot, like an arc across the room.
Just pee my pants.
I think being in your pants in a bathroom is a really
that's the ultimate trick shot.
Like you go into a bathroom, door locks, they hear you wash your hands, you walk out and just feed yourself.
That is really good.
It's a pretty, that's like a,
don't forget the sock.
Oh God, no, that's if you're doing work in there. That's if you're doing sound design. Yeah, that's only for like, sorry, I was doing all the audio for one of Darren Korb's games. He quit.
Oh, man. That's good. That's
a good. Jim is silently laughing. That's a badge of honor.
We've achieved something today.
We did it, folks. It's actually been a while since I had that kind of laughter on the show. It's good. It's nice to have.
Don't make our egos too high. As they say, as the kids say, don't gas me up.
Okay. All right.
It's a dangerous place.
Don't backmask me.
Don't backmask me, bro. Are we ready for another topic?
Yes.
Oh, there's more. Oh my God, there's another topic.
There's so many more topics. I thought
the poem was the
no, that's end like the, of the
show.
The
I can't believe
that. Yes, the intermission.
I can't believe Jim's giving us another topic.
Yeah, we got one more, I think. One more in us.
All right.
AC, your topic is playtesting Legos.
Yeah. I feel like actually this is a huge trap because I did not, in fact, playtest Legos.
Do you have anything to say about playtesting Legos?
Yeah. Disappointing everyone here. No, it's just because I've been playtesting a creative game. Mm. And the internal metaphor that I keep thinking of is playtesting Legos because this like particular playtest event that we've been going to is at a bar.
I have not been to it.
You know, it's an interesting experience because
this is like when Ryan had the topic dog bone facts. It had nothing to do with dog bones.
I was thinking this when I wrote it. So we can move on. But the long story short is that like finding somebody in a bar who wants to play test your 3-hour, you know, creative exploratory experience, I think is challenging. And it always makes me think of like, what if I brought a huge crate of Legos to a bar? And conceptually, it sounds kind of awesome. Like who doesn't want to play with Legos at a bar? Like that just sounds great.
Yeah. I mean, if I wanted to do anything at a bar, like maybe I would start there.
But also imagine I don't know if this makes it better or worse, but in this, you know, hypothetical, no one knows what Legos are, right?
Right.
They're like undiscovered.
You invented this stuff.
Right, right, right.
So there's no association with like this is a kid's game.
The movie Yesterday for Legos.
Yeah, exactly. So people showing, you know, and I think the metaphor actually does kind of work because I see people, it's so polarizing playtesting because people will walk up and they'll either be like, I have no, you know, like just immediately bounce off of it and walk away, or they'll be sucked into it. And it feels like there's no middle ground. And I imagine that Legos would be the same way. Like I can kind of see someone showing up and.
Yeah, I think it would take a certain kind of person to be into playing with Legos as an adult.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about, like, right, if you'd never played with Legos before, I think a lot of immediate reaction would be like, oh, this is like way too simple. And there's nothing here, you know, like after playing with Legos for like 2 minutes, you like make
it's an artistic medium, right? Like, so the way they approached this in real life, where Legos actually do exist, was
what?
Wait, holy shit.
Was they sell like $1,000 Lego kits with detailed instructions on where to put each brick, right?
Right.
Oh,
it's less like you're being creative and more like you are following instructions as a way of fidgeting almost.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel like
I actually love making Lego sets. Yeah, but I've only ever made them as an adult.
So there you go. Every creative designer ultimately embeds this linear path that's available for players at some level. Like I was thinking about Animal Crossing, and I've always felt kind of there's this weird capitalist vibe of like Tom Nook, you know, owns your real estate and then you're always trying to like pay off your mortgage or whatever. But then from like another design standpoint, it's that. I always think of it as a carrot and a stick. It's just like in creative design, like there's always a carrot. There has to be something for the player to want to do, right? And
yeah, don't starve. I think I read an essay about this where the designers had started out by making a quest system. They gave you like, here's a set of tasks to do. And it was an immediate hook for players. Like, here's what I'm doing right now. I don't need to like invent something to do with these systems. But then as soon as they ran out of tasks, their interest faded as well.
Yeah.
Whereas the players who played it when it was just a sandbox, they had to invent their own stuff to do. And because they were in that frame of mind, they just kept inventing stuff to do and they never ran out of quest content. But I didn't look at their playtest data. I wasn't there in the room, but I feel like you're kind of just describing different kinds of players.
Yeah.
Where like some people want a more directed experience. Some people, it's a spectrum. I think what's actually happening there is that they decided that they wanted to make a game that was more for the kind of sandboxy players.
Yeah, I think like Factorio is kind of an interesting example or thing to think about with like the different player thing and like how much, you know, instruction and like in Factorio, you're building a factory and there is like an end goal. You're supposed to like launch a rocket, but that is like happens like, you know, 100 hours into the game. So it's not really the thing.
Right.
The thing is like expand, right? Like that's it's like expand. And then there's these like alien bug creatures that started attacking your base. So you have to defend against them and it's this natural thing. So I played it by myself for a long time. And then like I like went to go play it with friends and they're like, oh, we turn off the enemies by default always.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, we just don't like that. Like our thing is like doing the organizational stuff in the game. And like the enemies are like annoying. And they blow up your base. And I was like, without the enemies, you know, how do you like know what to do? Or like, what's your goal? What are you like playing against?
Yeah. When I started playing Factorio, I was approaching it like a programming game where like, I'm trying to solve this puzzle. And then these dudes came up and started shooting at me or whatever, or like bugs or whatever it was that started biting me or whatever it was. And it was like, what if I'm working on a difficult programming puzzle in Visual Studio and like someone comes up and starts biting me in the ass.
It's great.
This is not what I'm here for.
It's literally like, you know, building your little Lego castle. And then they're just like every 20 minutes, they're just like, we're just going to blow up part of it. But that's, to me, that's part of the fun of Factorio is the like loss, the like grief over work that you've done and like how much it makes the enemies have real meaning. Cause they're not just destroying, they're just making a number go down. It's like they're destroying your work.
In real programming, it's the tools like Git that destroy your code.
Right.
Yeah. I think the comment about archetypes is definitely something that is legit and something that I've been thinking about. And you want to give this open experience to somebody, but you also have to, you know, design for all the different ways that people can be onboarded in that experience. And I think that that can be hard, especially when, like, I've been getting a lot of plays from, I imagine this is like purely speculation, but I imagine it's kids in middle school, because there's kind of like been this big growth of this incremental games genre, which is what people are calling clickers these days.
Yeah.
I have access to my analytics on Itch. And so I can tell that like 90% of the hits are coming from people who are scouring the internet for free HTML5 games, you know, tagged idle. And I just imagine being in school and going to Miniclip, you know, or Newgrounds or whatever. And I wonder if this is the Gen Alpha equivalent, you know, but my game isn't really set up for that kind of, you know, hyper growth, you know, kind of style of play. And so it's just interesting to see different people interacting with something.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that one thing that is different about Gen Alpha gamers is that they are a lot more interested in endless experiences. Like, uh-huh. I think if you talk to like the kids playing Fortnite about games that you finish and then stop playing because you finished them, they'll have no idea what you're talking about. And so like incremental games would fit right into that mold. We're like, yeah, the number just keeps going up.
Yeah.
Unless it's the best one, Universal Paperclip.
Yeah, yeah. Clickers that have an ending. Those, what was it? Not Space Team. It's not Space Team. It's another space clicker that has a...
It's not Universal Paperclip?
Clicker what has an ending. Oh, no. I'm thinking of Space Plan.
Have you played Space Plan? Is it good? Do you recommend it?
That's really good.
Okay.
Interesting. Very funny.
Yeah, I could recommend some incremental games.
All right, let's hear it.
Oh, really?
Give us
wow.
Top three clickers.
Top three.
But you've clickers. Never played Universal Paperclip, which is the
best. I have. One. You know, it's great.
No. I'm sorry.
I have. Not. Yeah, I'm not supposed to say it because it's the Frank Lance game, and I'm supposed to have played Frank Lance's games, but I have not played Universal Paperclip. I am really into this game called Rogathia.
Sorry, Rogapia?
ROG.
Okay, now everybody's laughing at once, so I still couldn't hear you spell it.
Sorry. ROGUATHIA, I believe.
Okay, found it.
I think it's somewhat unfinished. I think the dev kind of maybe abandoned it, but in an alternate universe, I think I would have made this game.
Oh, dang. This does look like this. I'm already compelled just by watching the Slain by a Jackal. It looks like you're just watching somebody play Rogue or NetHack or what have you.
Yeah. And for a while,
which, by the way, you can just do.
Well, I kind of thought that because we have bots, right, that play, you know, Rogue very well these days. And that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
And so when I first saw this, I was like, oh, is this just a, you know, like a web terminal emulator launching Rogue with some parameters, you know, exposed to the user, because that would be really cool. But no, they actually did write their own little roguelike.
Can you just play it?
Well, you're adjusting the hyper parameters. You can't play.
But you can't control the rogue.
You can't control the
roguelike itself.
No. The characters play themselves, which is, of course, you know, what I'm working on. I'm really interested in this concept.
Okay, so I'm looking at like editing player one. Here's a bunch of like traits you can choose. Where's the incrementing part? Does it have one of those? Because if not, that's okay. I could just watch this guy play, this robot play Rogue. That's fine.
I'm watching Jonah try to spell this on Google currently.
Rogathia.
Rogathia, perhaps. That's a good point. Where is the clicking, right? Where is the click and get 500 Bonzo bucks?
Oh, okay. It says no upgrades available. So perhaps later when I have more SP, there will be upgrades available.
Yes, I remember this now. You're only rewarded by finishing a run. So you can't click on something and then
awesome
and receive something.
Oh, so it's just automatic.
Yeah, perhaps this is an idle game. Ah, oh, genres.
This is fine. The decisions are overrated.
Yeah, I don't think this is a clicker.
Oh, you can. There are plenty of decisions you can make, but I think clicking.
Let's change the AI from explore dungeon to wander.
I feel compelled to give this game a strong review for us smaller devs out there. There's quite a bit of stuff that you can manage. This is great. This is amazing.
Oh, I could buy Lesser Strength for 5,000 SP.
Yeah, it's a slow burn.
I wonder what charisma does in this roguelike.
I also wonder what charisma does in this roguelike. But yeah, I think it's actually been a long time since I've played this. You can also scale your party members. So at a certain point, you have multiple people in the dungeon.
Oh, that's probably why you can't play yourself, because that would be untenable with direct control.
Yeah. Anyways, I didn't expect us to be playing this live. It's unprepared.
But you still haven't listed your other two liquors.
Well, my top in lists have been known for containing more or less than in historically.
Okay, all right.
Even more.
The other ones that I know of, I think, are just the like canonical clickers.
Like cookie clicker?
A cookie clicker, like black market.
I don't know that one.
You know, a dark room.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Welcome to Clicker Talk. TikTok, I'm in BR.
So there you go. There's my top three. It's one, and it wasn't an incremental game. thanks for joining us.
Just put universal paperclips on there so people respect you.
that's pretty in keeping with your tier list, I think.
Indeed.
And that's all the time we have for Topic Lords. Jonah, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at rock.site, I guess. I don't know. Oh, you can also find me at works.rip. That's my website. It's my personal website.
Are you on the Topic Lords Discord? Do you want to be on the Topic Lords Discord?
I am on the Topic Lords Discord, and I even go there sometimes. I think I'm Jonah. I think
hell yeah.
I think there's another Jonah. Yeah.
Are you actually Jonah, or are you your username?
I don't know. I'll change it if I'm not. I think I am Jonah. Since I now have my own Discord, which is awesome. I'm like the microcosm god. I think my Discord name is now Jonah everywhere.
We're professional now.
And AC, if this is something they want, where can people find you on the internet?
I can't remember if it's acguidet.itch.io or itch.io/acguidet, but I think it's acguidet.
Just try both.
Yeah, just try both.
It's acguidet.itch.io.
acguidet.itch.io. Check out Autograv and let me know if you like it. And I'm looking for feedback on the little mini thing that I posted a week ago, and I would appreciate trying to find the perfect audience.
So a week ago will be like
7 years ago.
It'll be like 6 weeks ago. Yeah. Thanks so much for being on.
Yeah, it was Thank so you. Much fun. Thank you, Jim.
Hi, this is Jim. This is the audio I append to every episode of Topic Lords. Congratulations to our newly anointed lords. This episode was edited by Esper Quinn, who can also edit your episode if you contact them on Twitter. If you'd like more people to hear the show, you can tell your friends about it, or rate and review us on whatever podcast service you use. You can add content to the Topic Bucket by emailing topicbucket@topiclords.com, and you can contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/topiclords. Patrons get episodes a week early, and you get access to the Topic Lords Discord, where you can discuss topics with all the lords that hang out in there. See you next episode!